Now, will you turn with me, please, to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 2, and to verse 13. The prophecy of Jeremiah. And in chapter 2, at verse 13. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. Let me say to you that these words are very famous and are often quoted by Christians. This is a famous text from the book of Jeremiah. And it's very easy to remember. And I would recommend that everybody, including the children, should try to learn it off by heart. My people, it is said here, have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. It's a good thing to memorize the texts that we hear from the pulpit. Well, now, what's the text talking about? Here we see God compared to a fountain. It is about God that this illustration is here used. God is a fountain of blessing, and he is forever pouring out his mercy and kindness and love upon us all in this life. We sometimes refer to this as God's common grace. And our dear friend Pastor Ashiel Blaise, just a few weeks ago at our Highland Bible Conference, gave a series of fine sermons on that very subject of common grace. And you can see why this is a fitting illustration for God. A fountain is forever pouring out its waters. It never stops, day and night. The water flows, the water gushes, and it never runs dry. And that's a perfect illustration for God himself. Day and night, summer and winter, all through our life, God is pouring out blessings and mercies upon us. But then we're told about another illustration. People have forsaken the fountain, and they have digged something else called cisterns or broken cisterns. Now, what are these? Well, these are artificial means and methods of holding water. You may get a spade and dig into the soil and try to put some sort of lining at the bottom of it. Or, in other countries, you may get a pickaxe and start to dig into the rock until you have a rather rough-shaped sort of basin which gathers the water. And you empty the water into it and you leave it there. But this particular system, says God, has a crack in it. And even the youngest child knows what happens to water in a basin or bowl with a crack. It drains away. Which is the picture which God is giving us here of what happens to those who turn their backs on God, who is the fountain, and look for lasting happiness in anything else. They have committed two evils, says God. They have forsaken, they have left, they have turned their back on me, and I am the fountain of all blessing. And that they have cut out for themselves broken systems. That is to say, they are looking for happiness in the things of this world. Broken systems of this world, whatever they may be. Well, now that is the picture, and I want to explain to you why I read to you from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2. It's because that whole chapter tells us the same thing as we have here in Jeremiah. The writer of Ecclesiastes, as I mentioned, is Solomon the king. He was a fabulously wealthy king. Silver was nothing in his reign. Everything had to be of gold. He had enormous amounts of wealth flowing into the country by means of his navy and his merchants and all the other methods whereby money was raised. Gold upon gold upon gold. So he could buy or make anything. And he did. He tells us in that chapter too, gardens with orchards and fruit trees and ponds for fish to swim in. He had places which were bird sanctuaries, and he had buildings and houses and grand palaces, men singers and female singers. He had instruments of music, everything you could think of. He ate what he wanted to eat. He drank the wine he wanted to drink. He kept back himself from no pleasure upon earth, he says. Now, he did this, notice, and yet he says, my wisdom remained within me. I wonder if you noticed that in the reading. What does it mean? Well, it means this. He did not do these things merely for the sake of enjoyment. He wanted to conduct an experiment. He wanted to find out whether these things could really make him lastingly happy. So he was conducting this experiment with all these earthly pleasures, the gardens and the birds and the trees and the flowers and the singers and the wine and all the other things. He did all that with a view to finding out whether a man or a woman can be lastingly happy or fully satisfied with all these things. And what was his conclusion? Well, he explains to us it was this. That when he had eaten and drunk and watched and looked and heard, he sat down and he said to himself, have these things really made me happy or not? And he shook his head and he said, no, vanity of vanities. I hated life. By which he means to say that when you try to find lasting satisfaction in anything in this world, it is doomed to failure, because sooner or later boredom sets in. That was the experiment, and that was his conclusion at which he arrived. And that's what God is saying here. My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and hewed out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Well, I want to open up the text with three headings. Let me give you the headings. First of all, we have here a sad complaint. Second, we have here what people choose foolishly. And thirdly, we have here what people forsake unwisely. Let's look at it then like that. First of all, we have a sad complaint. And here is a complaint. My people have committed two evils. You must understand that this is a complaint against the people. My friends, it is not right for us to complain. We should not complain about anything. The Bible makes that very clear. Read again the book of Numbers, and you can see whenever the people complained and murmured, the Lord heard it, and he was displeased. We should never complain. And Paul tells us that in 1 Corinthians 10, he says, neither be ye murmurers, as some of them murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Do you know that murmuring and complaining and grumbling is not only a sin, but it is a killing sin? Thousands of people have died because they have been grumblers and complainers and murmurers. How have they died? Well, God has put them to death as a judgment. Murmurers and complainers and those that are not satisfied, God is able to put them to death, as he did with these Israelites. And he does it still. It is a lesson to us, never complain against God. It is something which is very foolish. Now, Jesus tells us the same lesson, doesn't he? Do you recall when Christ speaks about the grumblings of the people of his day? He uses himself and John the Baptist as an illustration. He said, these people in this generation, they are like children in a marketplace, playing their childish games. And they say, we have piped to you, but you have not danced. We have mourned for you, but you have not lamented. This is a child's game. You know how children invent games, all sorts of skipping games and imaginative games. Well, here was a game that children evidently played. They pretended to have a pipe, and the other children were supposed to dance when the pipe was supposed to be played. It was all part of the game. You did sympathetically what you were requested to do. Or the children prepared and pretended to cry, and everybody else was supposed to join in. Well, you're like children, says Jesus. John the Baptist and I. Take that as an example, he says. When John the Baptist came, he came neither eating nor drinking. And you say about him, this man's got a devil. And I have come both eating and drinking, and you say about me, a gluttonous man and a wine bibber. Whatever we do doesn't satisfy you, he says. But wisdom is justified of all her children. Now that's a good question to discuss. What does he mean? Wisdom is justified of all her children. But his complaint was, they were grumblers, murmurers. And that is a sin. Let me ask you, dear friend, is this a sin that you are guilty of? Are you a complainer? A grumbler? Well, if you are, think again and ask God to give you strength to stop your complaining before you may be punished for it. And I say here in this text is a complaint, but notice it's not a complaint of men. It's not Jeremiah's complaint. It is God here who is complaining. My people, says God, have committed two evils. It is God who is complaining, and is complaining against people who turn their backs upon him. He is complaining against people who backslide away from God. He is complaining against those who begin to get tired of Bibles and Sabbath days and Christian services and fellowships, and who want to be like the rest of the world. Notice the people God is complaining against. My people. He's not talking about the heathen. He's not referring to the Philistines or the Egyptians or the Edomites. My people, Israel, those who should know better. And you know, that's what's been going on for a long time in this country. Exactly this very thing. People who were well brought up in Christian homes, with Christian fathers and Christian mothers, and in Christian Sabbath schools and Christian churches. So many of them have just got weary of God, and they have turned their backs upon him, and they're living for something in this world. Well, that's what God's complaining about, and I have to say, it's a very poor exchange. to turn your back on God and go for something else for pleasure is a very poor exchange. Some years ago, a very close friend of mine, who's a minister, was in Glasgow. And in the course of his ministerial duties, he was visiting a number of homes in the city, knocking on doors and saying, "How about coming to church?" And of course, he could have written an encyclopedia about all the excuses that people had. But amongst the doors he knocked on, there was a young girl, a teenage girl, I think, or about 20, let's say. And he spoke to her and discovered she had come from a very good Christian home. And not only that, but in her church, in the General Assembly of her church, she had been given prizes for excellent answers to Sabbath school questions and examinations. She'd done an excellent job. She'd risen right to the top in her Sabbath school examinations, and she'd gone to the moderator and he'd given her prizes. Well, that was good news, and fancy discovering a girl like this, but oh, no, no. She was now onto something like drugs and the pleasures of this world. And you can imagine how the minister felt as he walked away from that situation. I'm sure he felt that this verse was just the verse for her. "My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." So there's the complaint. And there it is, the way God puts it to them here. Now that forces us to ask the question, why do people forsake God? And why do they go for other things to get their happiness? That's what we're faced to look at. And there are several things to be said here. First of all, because of the devil's temptations. The devil makes this world look so good. The devil is a master at painting over this world to make it look good. If you really knew what this world was like, neither you nor anybody else would ever go after its pleasures. If you really saw through the paint and the powder and the frivolities that the devil puts around this world to make it look good, you would never go after it, because this world is rotten to the core. But the devil is very good at spicing it up. Like an old house, you know, that's falling down. He can whitewash the walls and make it look good and put new curtains in the window. And you think that this world and all its good things is marvelous. That's the way people think about this world. It's great. I want to have a life. I'm going for it. And they do. Just as Adam and Eve went for it when the devil said, "If you do what God has forbidden, you know, you'll be far better off. You will be like gods." And they fell for it. And that's the reason people fall into the same trap. That's why they turn away from God to the things of this world. They listen to the devil's voice. Oh, young people, let me say to you, don't listen to the devil's voice. If you do, I can promise you the hour and the day will come when you will weep bitter tears. It is an evil thing and a grievous thing to forsake God. And that's what God is complaining at here. Why else do people forsake God? Well, because of their blindness. We are all blind by nature. We don't see things as they really are. We go after the sight of our eyes, but then it turns out to be a mirage. Do you know what a mirage is? In the desert, sometimes when people are thirsty, they imagine that they can see an oasis of trees. And how grateful they are, because they're hot, thirsty, tired, and needing water and rest. So they go the distance that they imagine is the distance to this oasis. But when they get there, they discover it's a trick. It's a phenomenon of the desert. There's no oasis there at all. What they saw was just a vision. There was no water. There was no trees. There was no shelter. And so they have to go on and on. And many people have perished in the desert for that very reason. Now that's how this world is. Alas, alas, if only we could get people to believe in this. Dr. John Kennedy of Dingwall, who was a very great man in the 19th century, he used this illustration. He said, the day will come in the Highlands of Scotland when professing Christians will take from their ministers false doctrine, and that they will swallow it down without realizing the poisonous effect it will have. He said, it's like a blind man to whom you give a glass of dirty water, and he will drink it as heartily as though it was pure water. And that's what we're talking about here. Forsaking God and finding happiness in this world is blindness and leads to sorrow. I wonder if you boys and girls know what I mean when I talk about walking the plank. Have you ever heard the phrase, walking the plank? You've heard of pirates, haven't you? Well, in the 17th century, pirates who had ships at sea used to capture people from other ships, of course, and take their wealth off them. But they didn't want to have too many people on board ship. So when they stripped them of all that they wanted from them, their money and whatnot, they wanted to get rid of the people who were their prisoners. And this is how they did it. They used to have a plank which they would tie to the edge of the ship. And then with a sword they would make the people walk the plank. And one by one they would have to walk to the end of the plank until there was no more plank, and then they drowned in the sea. A very convenient way of getting rid of those you didn't want from the ship. Why do I tell you that? I tell you because to forsake God and to find happiness in this world is to walk the plank. Oh yes, you can take a few steps for a few short years. It seems to be solid enough, but at the end of it all, you fall off into a sea of misery. That's true. That's what God means. My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and they've hewed out for themselves these cracked, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Is that you? Come now, be honest. Come, I say, be honest with your own conscience, dear friends. And ask yourself, is this true of you? Are you turning your back upon the great God who made you and who will judge you? God is not saying this simply out of anger. He's not stamping his foot in fury and rage, as he says. God is saying this in pity and in kindness and in love. Oh, he says, what a foolish exchange. Can you imagine a person who was so stupid that you gave him a bar of chocolate and he opened up the paper wrapping and the silver paper underneath it, and then he threw away the chocolate and put the paper in his mouth? Wouldn't you say he was a madman? But that's what people do when they turn away from God and when they choose this present world. Or put it another way, suppose you gave a child a banana, and the banana was being peeled by the child. And when he'd finished pulling it down on the side, he threw away the banana and began to eat the skin. Wouldn't you think he's mad? And that's what people do. God is the fruit. God is the joy. He is the soul of our soul, the life of our life, the joy of our salvation. To turn away from him is to have the husks that the swine do eat in this world. Have you understood that? Now, secondly, let me say, we are told here what it is that people choose. They choose broken cisterns. Now, in some countries, you have to have cisterns or reservoirs to hold the water. If ever you go to South Africa, to the lands where the black people live, in South Africa you'll see, and probably in other places too in Africa, you'll see that every so often as you're traveling along the road, there are these great reservoirs beside the road. They're cut out of or dug out of the earth and the sand, and they gather water. But sometimes they dry up, and there's no water left. Well, in some countries, I say, they have a rainy season. Let's say the rainy season is in September, shall we? Now, in September, the rain comes down and falls down. And you have these reservoirs. And you have plenty of water for quite a number of weeks. But then the rainy season finishes. And then you come to November, December, January. No rain at all in those months. And what you see is the water level is going down in your reservoir all the time. Not simply because you're using the water, but because there's a crack in it and it's ebbing away, being wasted into the ground. Now, that is what is referred to here. When people go for happiness in this life, they discover that it slowly ebbs away. That's why people get hooked up on drink and drugs. Can I tell you how it works? When you first begin on drink, nobody ever intended to become an alcoholic. They didn't say to themselves, well, one of these days I'm going to be like one of these poor fellows down in the high street there selling these magazines. I'm going to be there and my life is going to be in tatters, sleeping rough under the hedges. No, nobody ever said that. What they said was, I like the taste of wine or whiskey or whatever it is, and I'm just going to take a little. But to get the next time the same amount of kick and pleasure, you have to increase the dose. And increase it and increase it and increase it so that you take a little bit more every time. Until you come to a point when the body can't do without it, whether it's drink or drugs or other pleasures. Your body becomes accustomed to it. You must go on and on and on, increasing the dose. And at that point, you are a slave. And it's like that with all the pleasures of life. You become enslaved to the pleasure, and the pleasure gives you less and less and less return, because it's a broken system. I wonder how many of you know the story of Tantalus. It's not in the Bible. It's a Greek myth, but it tells you an important story. Tantalus, let me tell you about him. He was a king, and he offended the gods. As I say, this is not biblical, it's not in the Bible, it's a myth and a legend from the Greeks, but it teaches a lesson. And the gods in the story punished Tantalus like this. They put him in a great pool of water, and above his head they put a tree with luxurious and beautiful fruit, so that he had everything he wanted, so he thought, until he tried to enjoy it. But when he bent down to drink the water in which he was standing, it went down, so he could never touch it and never drink it. And when he felt hungry and put his hand out, the fruit moved away, so he could never get it. That's why we have the word tantalize. It means to torment somebody with hopes that are never realized, never enjoyed. Well, that's what this world does, and Solomon tells us that in that famous chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes. If men choose the things of this world and forsake God, then you will end with disappointment when the end of the day comes. Now, a great theologian in America put it like this. I had to read his book many years ago, and this is what he said. I never forget it. He said, a man is different from an animal. In this way, amongst others, he said, that if an animal gets the food and things that it needs, it's perfectly content. Then he said, take a cow. If you put a cow in a field of clover, it's perfectly happy. It wants nothing else. It will go on eating the grass and the clover as long as it lives. It will never start snorting with discontent. That's exactly what it wants. All that it wants is the clover and the grass. But he said man is different. Whether it's children or grown-ups, we're different. You take a person, child or adult or teenager, and put them in a situation, give them everything they want. They won't be happy ever after. They'll be happy for an hour or two, or a day or two. But then something happens to us all called boredom. We've had enough. It's true with children. We all know then, a child has a birthday present. Out comes the toy. The child is wild with excitement, sits down, starts to build with these bricks, or put the lines together, moves the car along the track, or whatever it is, or the train along the track, and for an hour or two, perfectly content. But then, they've had enough. They want something else. That's because man has an immortal soul. And nothing can satisfy the soul of a man but God. We're made in His image. And all the pleasures of life cannot satisfy any man's soul for long. Oh, I love the way Augustine put it. I never tire of thinking about his wonderful words. Listen to these words, famous words. Speaking to God, he said, "Thou hast made us for thyself, and our heart is restless till we find our rest in thee." How true that is. Or again, let me put it to you this way, the Shorter Catechism. Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. Nothing else can satisfy us. The heart, my friend, is three-cornered like a triangle. Your heart and my heart and the heart of all human beings, they're triangular. They're three-cornered. In this sense, that nothing can fill man's heart but only the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Only when God has filled our heart will we really be satisfied. Thou hast made us for thyself. Listen to what Jesus said. If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. Out of his belly, as the scriptures have said, shall flow rivers of living water. You see, God is a fountain. And when we drink from the waters of Christ's blessed promises, then our heart is satisfied. But if we drink from any other source, any other broken system, it doesn't work. Listen to Jesus again. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. You will find rest unto your soul. And you won't get that anywhere else. I heard an interesting phrase used a few weeks ago in the summertime. I'd never heard it before. Maybe you have. Wall-to-wall football. Well, now, I'd never heard that phrase. They were referring to the coverage of international sport. And this was a phrase used, wall-to-wall football, like a carpet. And that's the way some people's lives are. Wall-to-wall athletics, wall-to-wall this, that, and the other. Wall-to-wall earthliness. No wonder people are discontented. No wonder the crime rate is going up. No wonder people are committing all sorts of wicked crimes. The root cause of that criminality is the heart of man cannot be satisfied. And so men become dissatisfied with what they're doing and they want to hurt other people. That's more interesting. I don't like it that you're enjoying your life, so I'll come and kick your door in and steal from you and I'll hurt you and break your car and so on. That's the spirit behind it. It's the malicious spirit which arises when people's hearts are not satisfied with God. The answer to criminality in the end is that people should be satisfied. And when people have real satisfaction with the presence of God in their hearts, the crime rate will slump almost to zero. That's what happens in revivals. The statistics prove it. Look at the statistics for crime in Northern Ireland in 1858 and 9 and 60, time of great revival. The police had almost nothing to do. Petty crimes, somebody whistling down the street on a Sabbath day, that's about the extent of the criminality. Nobody would think of doing you an injury, because everybody was so taken up in the heavenly thoughts of revival and God and Christ and heaven and the Bible. Their hearts were satisfied. They were drinking from the fountain of life. So for a few years things changed. My very dear friend, don't you be a fool, imagining that if you turn your back on God, you'll find pleasure somewhere else. That's what the world's telling you. I don't look at these magazines very much in the newspapers or in newsagents or in the railway stations that we have to go to. I try to look the other way. Most of them are pretty awful things. But I'll tell you, they've all got one message. All these magazines have got one message. That the world is a wonderful thing. Come and drink. Come and fill yourself with the world. That's what they're all saying. And God is telling us it doesn't work, because man has a three-cornered heart. Only there with him, in fellowship with him through Christ as the Redeemer, do we have lasting, eternal happiness. Now, very briefly as I close, thirdly, let's see here what people forsake. What do they forsake? They choose, says God, they choose these broken systems. But what do they forsake? They forsake God, who is a fountain. A fountain of what, you may say? Well, a fountain, first of all, of power. Power. Power to make us good. Power to do us good. Oh, what power God has. Infinite power. Endless power. You know, this power that God has to help his people can lead them through all the trials and troubles of life. This is what people need to know. There is a power in the gospel which can change our lives and lead us safely through all the difficulties of this world. What else is there in God besides power? There is grace and there is love. And man was made for love, not simply human love, which is very precious and we need that too, but man was made for the love of God. God made us to dwell with him in the garden. In the evening of the day, God came to talk to man. It was the will of God that we should have fellowship with our Maker. That's why God came and spoke to Adam and Eve in the garden. It was because we were made for fellowship with God and communion with God, and nothing else will do. We need to have his love. I need to know that all is well. Now, perhaps you've been looking at the magazine that you were given this morning, and you may have noticed a news item in the middle of the magazine about the late President Ronald Reagan. Did you spot it? Well, if you didn't, go back to it. If you did, you'll find it very interesting, as I did. An evangelical preacher is telling us his experience of having spoken on one occasion to President Reagan, some years ago, before he died, of course. And the preacher had his opportunity to ask a question of the president. A number of other ministers were there, and it was a sort of occasion, seemingly, when this was allowable. You couldn't do it on all occasions, of course, so this was the question which this evangelical minister put. "Mr. President," he said, "if God were to say to you, what hope have you got that I will put you into heaven?" Something like that. "What hope have you got, Mr. Reagan, that I will put you in heaven?" "What would you answer, Mr. President?" said the minister. It was a very bold question, wasn't it? But a good one. And this is what happened, seemingly. I'm just trying to remember what the article says just now. Immediately, President Reagan put his head between his knees like that, and kept his head down for about 40 or 50 minutes, seconds, quite a long time, 40 or 50 seconds. And then he slowly unwound himself, and this is what he said: "I am quite unworthy to go to heaven. What I would say to God is this, that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. That's my hope." Wasn't that a wise answer? Isn't that a right answer? Would God more of our politicians in this country could give so wise an answer? But that's it, you see. We have to come to that. We are not worthy of heaven. We are not worthy of glory. We are not worthy of these things. And it's only when we have Jesus Christ as our Savior, then have we a right to have this hope of the love of God towards ourselves. And the love of God is that sweet thing which fills the heart of a Christian and makes up for all his sufferings in this world. Listen to the Song of Solomon. "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine." That's true. I know it's true. All the Christians here and anywhere else in the world, they know it's true. The love of Christ passes all thought, all knowledge. The love of Christ has length and breadth and depth and height. Yea, it has all riches associated with it. There's nothing like it. My dear friends, have you tasted that love of Christ? Are you able to say now, as you leave this meeting in a few minutes' time, are you able to say, "I know what you're talking about, minister. I've had it. I have it daily. This love of Christ, more precious to me than rubies." Well now, there is a fullness of power in God. There's a fullness of grace and love in God. And as I close, there is a fullness of glory in God. One moment in heaven will more than make up for all the sufferings of a Christian in this life. That's the way we express it. So then, as I close, those who forsake God forsake their own mercy. We have many examples of it in the Bible. King Saul chose the wrong way. And at the end of his life, King Saul said this: "I have played the fool and erred exceedingly." Balaam went the wrong way. The love of money was his undoing, and he died in his sin. Felix, the Roman governor, heard Paul speaking about righteousness and temperance and judgment to come, and Felix trembled. And he said to Paul, "Go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee." But he never did. And wouldn't it be terrible if you're here today and you were like these people whose names are mentioned, but really secretly you have no interest in God or even in your own soul. What you really want to do is to get away from these things and enjoy this world. Remember then, if ever you think that or have this tempting thought, remember these words: "My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water." Oh, my dearest friend, turn to Christ now, right here, and give him your heart and your life and all that you have, and I will guarantee you will know what it is to drink from the waters of the fountain of life and be satisfied forever.